Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dan Messick in Smithers at CICK News. Today on The Scoop, Columbia Park Elementary students in Revelstoke practice inclusivity on the playground. The success of a school-wide project to teach students at Columbia Park Elementary School to communicate using augmentive and alternative communication has led to a series of grant applications for outdoor communication boards at local schools and community playgrounds. Melissa Jameson from Stoke FM in Revelstoke will have more on that story. In Prince George at CFUR, Ian Gregg will bring us a story about prevention versus a pound of cure, addressing natural disaster readiness in BC. The cost of emergency management and readiness is increasing year over year amidst drought conditions and preparations for another busy wildfire season. However, are preventative measures against natural disasters like wildfires cost-effective when compared with rebuilding post-disaster? Stay tuned for that one. And a post-pandemic founded band will play the Gorge Hall during their first tour. Aaron Cockburn has finally made a dream come true, debuting his band KSAR to the Vancouver Island region this past year after the pandemic delayed his vision. Cortez Island will be one of the first stops on their new tour. Lonnie Taylor at CKTZ News on Cortez Island will bring us that story. And finally, the town of Smithers is updating its mobile vendor bylaw, and our own Pam Hassan from CICK News in Smithers will bring us more. Keep listening.
You're listening to 92.5 Stoke FM in Revelstoke. This is a news update. Students at Columbia Park Elementary School in Revelstoke can communicate using a second language. But it's probably not one you're thinking of. No, it's not French or Spanish or even American Sign Language. So what is it, you might be wondering? It's Augmentative and Alternative Communication, or AAC for short. AAC uses communication devices, systems, strategies, and tools to provide alternatives to verbal communication. It includes the use of pictures, drawings, words, and letters, as well as gestures and mimicry to provide a way for nonverbal individuals to communicate. Revelstoke School District speech and language pathologist Monica Penner explains.
So it's really presenting another way to communicate to support whatever verbal skills we have, as well as to provide an alternative way of communicating that is not using verbal language. So it could be things like pointing. Sign language is a different form of communication, gestures, but it can also be with like really high tech, like using an iPad to talk.
The story of how students at Columbia Park Elementary learned to communicate using AAC begins 4 years ago when Penner and learning support teacher Victoria Strange found themselves sharing a classroom. That same year, two students, both nonverbal, started kindergarten.
One of the reasons it came about in the first place was because there was a lot of building happening in Columbia Park. It was parts of it were being completely rebuilt. And I lost my office, and Victoria and I had to share a space for a while. So we had our students who were nonverbal coming into kindergarten, and they would come to Victoria's room. And so I got to observe them more than I typically get to observe these students. And Victoria and I got to work side by side.
It created a unique situation and set the tone for collaboration between Strange and Penner, who began brainstorming ways to introduce AAC to the school. The reason, they explained, is that if you want to introduce AAC to a student, then they need to see others using it. And the way to make that happen is to teach other people around that student how to use it.
And our two students that had come in kindergarten, they were introduced to an iPad with AAC. Touch Chat is the name of the program, and that was a way that they could communicate by pressing pictures to say the words. And so they were using this already in their classes, but again, their peers didn't have any knowledge about it. So we started thinking, how are we going to introduce it? We decided that Monica and I would go into every classroom from kindergarten to grade 7, and we would show many different forms of AAC.
They then created a school-wide challenge where students helped to create core boards for all of the classes in the school. A core board is a giant board with pictures. Nonverbal people can point to a specific picture to help communicate to others what they want to say. It includes words that are hard to teach, but that are important to everyday situations. Things like pronouns or questions like where and when. They also include what are referred to as fringe words. Nouns or words that are used only in a specific situation. For example, measuring spoons in a kitchen. Eventually, students were ready for an even bigger challenge, going an entire day communicating using only AAC.
It was fantastic.
Yes. I mean, some classes lasted maybe only 5 minutes, but other classes actually attempted to go farther along.
It was very cool to see the students kind of just explain what they were doing or communicating with each other just by these different boards that they had in range. And gestures and other ways of communicating, just not verbally.
Following the success of the Classroom Core Board project, Strange and Penner began to think about permanency. A grant obtained through the Children's Variety, along with funding from the school district and the school's Parent Advisory Council, allowed for the creation of a permanent outdoor core board. Today, the core boards continue to have a school-wide benefit. It not only allows students and staff to communicate with nonverbal students, but it also helps students whose first language isn't English or students who are having trouble communicating using words when they're struggling with big or difficult emotions. There are also plans to expand outdoor communication boards to other local elementary schools, as well as local parks. Roberta Kubik, Revelstoke School District 19 superintendent, told Stoke FM that the school district, along with the Revelstoke Early Childhood Development Committee, have submitted grant applications to see core boards placed in various community parks and school playgrounds. For more news stories, visit our website at stokefm.com.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. The costs and expenses associated with emergency management have increased in the province of British Columbia over the past few years. For example, the BC Wildfire Service in 2021 had 1,781 personnel listed. By the 2023 season, there is a 55.6% increase in full-time permanent staff since the 2021 season, with 568 full-time permanent and 1,592 seasonal, for a total of 2,160 personnel. Compared to the 1,781 2 years prior, it's a significant increase that has transpired alongside an increase in wildfire activity. As associated costs rise, taxpayers are on the hook for most of the costs. To many, the need for that investment is obvious, especially in our region where there is a significant amount of wildfire activity that has threatened to destroy, or indeed has destroyed, many residences. But some question the cost-benefit ratio. To get an idea of the big picture, we went into conversation with the MLA, or the member of the Legislative Assembly for the Prince George Mackenzie District, Mike Morris. We take you now to our recorded conversation from his constituency office in Prince George, BC.
I wanted to ask you today, it'd be nice if this idea was as simple, the old adage of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I'm curious about applying that to the activity of BC Wildfire Services versus the cost of damage and reconstruction. Obviously, there is an expense to maintain BC Wildfire Services and have them be able to logistically deploy across the province. It's a significant expense, sure. But then there's also the cost of repairing infrastructure, say BC Hydro lines that get burned up in a forest fire, residential construction, all kinds of buildings, roads, you name it. Essentially, does the cost to benefit ratio work out so simply? I would imagine it's a good investment. But can you peel back the layers on that a little bit for us?
It is a good investment. It's a fraction of the investment that BC should be making in wildfire prevention. And wildfire prevention is a broader topic than just trying to put out a fire. You need the infrastructure in place in order to do that. Are the fleets of aircraft that we have enough? Are they the right kind of aircraft? Why aren't we doing more night firefighting with night vision capabilities and hiring the crew that's capable of doing that? So there's a number of things that we need to do there. But this is something that British Columbia should have looked at a long time ago, because it's been exacerbated by the force practices that we've had in play over the last several decades. Clear-cutting, for an example, has led to where we are today with the loss of forest cover, the frequency and magnitude of flooding, which dries out the watershed in turn, and the planting of the conifer plantations that we have are so dense and so thick. If you walk into some of these plantations that are 30, 40 years old, there's no undergrowth in there. They're very densely planted at 2,000 or 3,000 stems per hectare. But they have a base of about 6 inches of dry pine needles and pine cones. And during a drought era, like we're going through the last couple of years, and will continue to go through probably for a bit, I hope we don't, but I think we will. If you get a lightning strike in an area like that, it's volatile. It just goes up instantaneously, and they are very hard to stop just because they are so densely packed with trees, and we have so many. We have 20 million hectares of that in BC right now, so it's a clear and present danger that we need to pay attention to. Pleasure.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca. Or CFUR.ca.
This is a CKTZ news update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. A brand new band that derived out of a post-pandemic world in Victoria is coming to Cortez Island. Kazar has begun its first tour and will be showcasing its new talent on Cortez April 27th. I caught up with band members, the founder Aaron Coburn and Casey Ryder, to find out more about this new band and all of its colors.
Casey, what's your role in the band? What instruments do you play?
I joined up with Aaron just near the end of the pandemic shutdown, and just over 2 years ago. I answered an ad on Facebook, and during the pandemic, I wasn't playing much music, other people, and so I had a little bit of time to hunt around, and then I saw this ad for a dude who's, I want to do an arty folk project. And if anybody's interested in doing some original music, drop me a line. And so I was like, oh, I'll just give this a shot. I work as a professional musician, teacher, and touring musician. I'm off to Montana on Wednesday for 5 days, gigging with Ken Levine down there on upright bass. This is what I'll be playing tonight as well. So this is my upright bass here. So I started playing with the orchestra tonight. So I've had a lot of people through my life that I've bumped into who are like, oh, I'm starting a band. And you're just not sure if you're interested in the music they want to play or their level of experience, that you both are in the same place in your music. I had an open mind, but I also was like, I was pretty skeptical that I was going to meet somebody of interest just on Facebook.
Casey, what was it like the first time you and Aaron met?
Well, I said I'd like to play some bass with you, and I'll do some singing too. But I'd like to hear some of your music. So I said, do you have any kind of sample you can send me? And so he did, and I was really impressed. So we got together to play, and it was great. He brought over his accordion when he sang some of his original music, and I was just thrilled. I went, wow. Of course, doing all original music is a wonderful thing, especially when you write songs as good as Aaron does, but it's wonderful to be part of.
What kinds of challenges did you face getting the band started?
It's a tough go. You have to plan on a couple years of finding players and getting gigs and seeing what happens, right? So it's been a big kind of commitment and a big change for me, because there's nothing to pay the rent out of that. And I that's a thing that I don't like very much about being a full-time musician. is that you have to take that into consideration, because you allow for a lot of time for an original project to get off the ground, and rehearsals and auditions, and it's just unbelievable. So you have to really believe in the music and the musicians, the people themselves, because no one likes to put in a lot of work and heart and energy into something that just turns out to be a flake fest. Fortunately, it hasn't been like that. Aaron's a really dependable, highly creative, and highly skilled musician. We've gone through two different drummers. We had a violinist and a saxophonist for a while. And then we were a six-piece band for a while. We had a tabla. But then Aaron took a little bit of a break, and we got a new drummer and some new members. And anyway, about last year, we're not coming far from a year anniversary where we really lined up the five members that we currently have now.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news with a local perspective. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca, or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada. Today on CICK News, I am speaking with Director of Community Services for the Town of Smithers, Will George. Will and I are speaking about the proposed updated mobile vendor bylaw, which helps delineate which town-owned properties you can expect to see, hopefully, a little more foot traffic with mobile vendors appearing there this year. That's today on CICK News.
Hi, my name's Will George, Director of Community Services with the Town of Smithers.
Okay, so we're talking about the mobile vendor bylaw. Can you tell me currently what the situation is for people who have licenses who operate mobile vendor shops?
Yeah, so the process right now is to apply for a business license and go to any of the designated spots for mobile vendors, whether it's at the special events or at locations that they identify for setting up their shops. Mm-hmm. This proposal that we have for bylaw number 1964 is to create more of a streamlined process for mobile vendors to set up. And we are having some engagement to make sure that our current mobile vendors are aware of what these changes are, as well as to extend the invite to other individuals who might be looking to set up mobile vendor businesses in our community. So there's a variety of changes that are included in that.
It mentioned about kind of like extending this to the Riverside Campground. Why is that an area of interest for the town to kind of make available to mobile vendors?
Yeah, so as part of the proposed bylaw, we have designated mobile vending areas that we hope will streamline the process and have pre-approved locations for mobile vendors to set up. So within those, we have the vacant lot next to Beauville Square, Central Park, Goat Park, Chandler Park, Elks Park, Heritage Park in two different locations, and Riverside Campground. So at Riverside Campground, as part of the proposal, we have four locations that are there for mobile vendors to set up that are pre-approved. This is to extend the involvement at our campground. It's our campground compared to some other campgrounds in the province is very mixed between available for tourists and out-of-town folks to come and enjoy, as well as for our locals. So we do see a good amount of community events that happen at Riverside Campground, and we're trying to support that to make sure that when people are looking to host events there, there can be pre-approved spots for mobile vendors to set up that have access to the different facilities that are there. Mm-hmm. And these are approved in locations that are both stable and help with the flow of traffic around that location. Yeah. So there's designated spots that the town is proposing approving.
What if a vendor wants to show up in the same area every week? Is that something that's going to be allowed with this bylaw?
Yeah, so the proposed bylaw is moving forward that vendors will not be located in more than 2 consecutive days in one location unless the approval by the Director of Development Services. So there can be a process where vendors can say that they want to set up in these locations during this certain time period. We just need to know that in advance. Mm-hmm. And that is moving to approval for staff for that one. So the Director of Development Services will be the authority to approve mobile vendors on town-owned properties. That's a change from council having to approve that. So we're hoping that will streamline the process, that we don't need to wait for council meetings to get that application processed there. And both the mayor and the CAO will sign the license of occupancy agreement. Now, I will stress that this is just for town-owned properties and the mobile vendor bylaw is just for within town limits.
There's obviously preference to these town-owned properties and that's what the bylaw. But what if someone wants to have vendors, let's say at like a school, like something like that, or if they want to have like a pop-up bazaar or something like that and they want to have vendors. Is that the kind of thing that would still be available, but it's an ad hoc way of being approved?
So glad you asked that question. We're all about placemaking. So placemaking is being incorporated into the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, into the Economic Development Plan, into some of these strategic conversations that we're having, and this falls into exactly that. Yeah. So when different organizations or individuals are looking to have these bazaars, we're wanting to receive those special event applications. Yeah. And make sure that we have the information, that it's a safe event, that we have the emergency access for our fire rescue ambulance and RCMP that are coming in. So that is a separate process. The mobile vending bylaw that is being proposed is separate than the business license process and separate than the special events permits. Mm-hmm. But for those bazaars and different events, that's a separate purpose there. And for mobile vendors that are looking to set up on private property or the school, as you said, then they would work directly with the property owners there. And we're encouraging additional vendors to set up. This is just focused on town-owned properties.
But what about sound making?
Yeah, so what is being proposed in the bylaw under the general categories, it's stating that no mobile vendors may operate any noise or sound making or sound producing equipment. So we don't want there to be a wide variety of mobile vendors that are setting up at these shops that go against our good neighbor bylaw or producing a variety of noise that disrupts current operations, mm-hmm. whether it's in commercial or residential. Mm-hmm. The mobile vendors is not just for food, it is a variety of businesses. Mobile vending looking to sell or offer for sale goods, wares, merchandise, or prepared to order food. So could be both the retail side, products, services, food. We are looking to make sure that the mobile vendors are helping to produce a positive business climate, working with our current bricks and mortar locations. Mm-hmm. So do not do business within 30 meters of other vendors unless they receive permission from the vendors. And it's working with our current brick and mortar locations there. So we definitely want community members who are interested in this proposed bylaw, if they're operating a mobile vending business in the community or interested in starting up one in the future or expanding to Smithers, to complete the community survey that's available on the Town of Smithers website and Facebook page, and hopefully share it on the radio, which will be open until Wednesday, April 10th. And the link is there. It's a pretty straightforward survey. There is a few questions there. There's about 4 or 5 questions. And then we do have an in-person event on Wednesday, April 10th from 4 until 7 p.m. in council chambers, where community members can drop by, talk to town staff about the survey, about the proposed bylaw, ask any questions that they have on those. We're encouraging residents' participation in this before we bring this forward to council.
Sure. Great. Thank you so much, Will.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenay, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.